When I see that quote and when I hear you talk about it, the intersection of earth, philosophy, poetics, ethics, science, very much obviously Snyder, that's yes. part of what draws you to him. And then the discussion of form that's in the book, and I'll just yes. read from page 45, Vasily Kandinsky.
Yes.
Form is always temporal, i.e. relative, for it is nothing more than the means necessary today through which the present revelation makes itself heard. Form is the outer expression of the inner content. We should never make a god out of form. We should struggle for form only as long as it serves as a means of expression for the inner sound. Therefore, we should not look for salvation in one form only. That's yes. one quote.
Yes.
Another, and what I'm trying to get to is a notion of this combination
yes.
that, in other words, a poetics that's also a cosmology.
Yes.
So the other quote on the next page is, to see without eyes is to see freely, not in the sense of granting one's own ego free license to do whatever it wants, but rather to participate in the sovereignty of nature's own imagination, that is, in the freedom at the heart of the coming to be of form.
Yes.
So to discover the form that's already inherent and to get in sync with yes. that. You know, Gary's talked about the wilderness of the mind.
Yes.
And so he's after that. So to me, it's a combination of cosmology and poetics is what you're articulating.
Absolutely. You know, the Kandinsky quote, that's from a book that translates concerning the spiritual and art. And as Kandinsky is trying to, make a strong pitch for what's happening to art in the very early parts of the 20th century. He's not saying all other forms of art were wrong. This finally is the arrival of the true form. That art has no form, if by that you mean art is only the forms of art that it's been. Art is all the forms of art that it has been and all the forms of art to come. Now, what is art if it's not simply its form? What is this animating artistic impulse that gives rise to all the forms of art and all the continents have been that trace art all the way back to our shamanic, you know, pre-literate periods? I mean, art is really the oldest of the human artifacts. It belonged very, very deeply to who we've always been before we left any other relics of cities or relics of politics. What is this spirit? The book itself says, you know, the ecological crisis is, for want of a better word, a spiritual crisis. It's not just saying, shall we replace the form of who we have been with a new form, a new corrected form? Spirit's a dicey word because it says all the wrong things in so many ways. It sounds like you're trying to get away from the world. It's a way of trying, in a more Western idiom, to zero in on something that's at the absolute heart of Mahayana, which is emptiness. Ah, Shariputra, have you not heard? Form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. Now, Kandinsky, who, to my knowledge, had no deep reading of the Buddhist traditions, although he was a very cosmopolitan, world culture-oriented person. This was a period in which they were electrified by African art, and I'm sure they misunderstood it in so many ways and appropriated it in infelicitous ways. But still, you can see in their openness to it, this form that so thoroughly challenged European forms, that something besides European form or African form was opening. There was a solidarity with art as showing us the living emptiness of forms. I think that's really key. So how then do you see emptiness? Well, you don't see the form of emptiness. The form of emptiness would be nihilism, and that's to add salt to an open wound. That's going in the wrong direction. It's to receive forms differently, to see forms not merely as ends in themselves, but as part of life processes. And we can see that already in poetry. Poetry is both the history of poetry, very valuable, things that have been done, things that have come into form, and poeticizing. That poetry can be exhausted by no poem, that the history of poetry can never have a final period. The history of art can never have a final period. That what is art? It belongs to art never to be able to answer that question, and that is its life.
Denise Levertov, who lived the last 10 years of her life not far from this present scene, said form is never more than a revelation of content.
That's exactly right.
And I think that's accurate.
And we call that inspiration. We call that creation.
Yeah. Snyder's interest in bioregionalism goes back to the 60s or 70s. A quote on page 32 says, "When the bioregion is not jeopardized by the manner in which we are part of it, we are our bioregion."
Yes.
Is bioregionalism a thing that was appropriate for the 80s and out of date now, or is it valid for the time in which we live?
You know, it's just a word. And that being said, I think it's a pretty good word. I think it does a number of things that are very valuable. One, it gets us away from an abstract sense of place. So you speak about the problem of place, admittedly in very abstract terms, but in so doing, you say that place is never just generically place. It is singularly, specifically, and also historically, singularly places. So when Joanna Macy proposed a council of all beings, Snyder very, very thoughtfully retorted, well, what we need is a village council of all beings, as in, you know, thinking about place or earth simply by saying, okay, we'll think the earth as earth, misses the thought of the earth. The earth is desert and rainforest. The earth is 17th century earth. The earth is 10 billion year ago earth. The time and place matter, and they conspire together to give us the temporal spatial uniqueness of the places that give us a sense of ourselves as place. I think that's really cool. So in regionalism, you get that. We want to think place regionally, but the bio, I think you're also getting something deliciously temporal. This place is not another place, nor is it settling into the form of itself. It's alive. It's temporally dynamic. You know, I'm struck here when you go to the eastern side of the Cascades and you come across right off of I-90 near the Columbia River, the remains of this ancient forest, this fossil forest, including fossilized ginkgos and these massive trees. You look at it now and it's just these barren hills in which nary a tree will grow. The Columbia River comes carving through this, you know, this water that's contrasting and otherwise really quite grassy, palouse-oriented land. But this was once, you know, a massive forest. You know, mountains come and go. You know, to think not just regionality as a way in which we think of place in general, but think it, what is this place? What is it to be on Earth here in Ish River Country? Now, what is practice now? In a way, Dogen appears not as who he truly is, but simply in a way in which he's only accessible now, which is, you read Dogen when the imminent collapse of our species is clearly imaginable. Now, here, from what we can see around us, as in imminent threat, it can now be what it is. Things are not what they are in a vacuum. You know, there's no such thing as X in general. X is always temporally and spatially formed, and it's moving. And it's not see that, it's just, you know, I'll put one last way. The Zen tradition is extremely suspicious of our over-reliance on abstraction. You have to do that as a matter of convention, otherwise we can't get business done. We can't have a conversation. But you're not an abstract sense of yourself. We're not in an abstract place. We're in a living place. It's now, here, who are we?
When you find your place where you are, practice occurs.
Practice is being your place. It is being your place. Practice, so, you know, to think that there's some generic way to be that. So I'll put it like this. If you think Zen practice is not worrying about President Trump, if you think a Zen practice is just relaxing and it's like a form of
navel gazing,
you know, then Pope Benedict was right. It's just autoeroticism. But that's an unfair critique of Zen, because at its best, it's moving in the exact opposite direction. Not who are we in general. Here, now, today, this minute, who are we? And that is a spatially and temporally specific question. What are the conditions that give rise to who we are? What are its temporal openings, its temporal threats, its opportunities and crises? That's who we are. I mean, in that way, you know, the Zen insistence upon mindfulness is key. If you could just figure out who we were in general, and that's what we were, if just we're just generally this or that, you would not have to be mindful. Mindful means pay attention. Don't simply go for the transtemporal, transspatial answer. Now here, what is it to be in Seattle as we talk with President Trump in the White House, with the Paris Climate Accords pulled out of, as we began our interview, with 3 to 4 weeks of unbreathable air in Seattle, with ash coming in from, you know, almost every direction, depending on which way the wind was blowing, was enough fires that the wind could blow anywhere from any direction, and it would bring in ash. There was so much fire that fires now, on average, burn twice as much as they did in the 1980s. In this region.
Yeah.
And somehow it made sense of us to disparage part of our own fellow citizens and double down on an absolutely suicidal environmental policy. And for the environmental record of Trump, given that he has done almost everything wrong, for that not to have been the most egregious, even worse than Russia, right, should have been this.